Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Yankees win, Val.
Oh, gosh.
One more step. Oh, yeah. Poor Twins.
Poor Twinsy.
Them poor Twins.
Ugh. God, the third... What is it? 16 postseason games they've lost in a row now?
Yeah, especially to the Yankees. Ugh. Yankees, it's like 12 or 13. I don't know. But, yeah, toward the end of last night's game, and it was a late one, they always find all the most depressed looking fans in the stadium. And I have to turn my eyes because I approve of what's happening to them, but I feel bad for their pain. You know, it might happen to us next round. I don't know, but it's just one of those things. So yeah, October's so far progressing nicely. How about you, Tracy?
Well, I'm just over with baseball because the Mets screwed up. They came back and had an opportunity to really do something absolutely stunning the second half. And, of course, in their usual fashion, they choked like the chokers they are. So,
we'll see. Next year, you got a chance.
Yeah. It's always next year.
So we never do anything. We never usually do things back to back, but here we are again today.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a time machine because people are hearing it tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's why I said Wednesday, because today's Tuesday, but we're recording it today for tomorrow.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, yeah, the Yankees have already won a day now.
There are some things that are not timely, like-ish, as much as they could be tomorrow. But we're going to do our best here, and we wanted to get a show out for everybody as a team. So here we are. I'm actually working on something interesting right now that I hope to have threaded out by today. Do you remember the Nader case? George Nader.
Oh, yeah. I talk about it a lot on my show, actually.
So there's some interesting stuff going on here. There's like what they call a media coalition in the court filings, which would be the New York Times, CNN, The Washington Post, etc., that have teamed up to attempt to get the original search warrant. Now, the original search warrant in this case is not in regards to Nader's child exploitation charges, child pornography charges, etc. The original search warrant in this case was issued from the Mueller special counsel because Nader was a witness in Mueller's. He appeared 125 times in the report. He was a witness. In January of 2018, they issued a search warrant to grab his devices. They got them. Mm-hmm. During that review, they found these things, sat on them for over a year, and then arrested him in June of 2019. So I can't believe we are in October, Frank. I'm just like, wow. So anyway, so Nader, the original search warrant is the Mueller investigation search warrant. So of course the media is clamoring to get their hands on it. They want to know what Mueller search warrant said and feel that they have access to it. But everything in that Mueller, you know, investigation is off limits. Grand jury, yeah. You know what I mean? So it's been interesting to see Nader's attorneys arguing that it'll prejudice a jury because they'll be able to report in the news media things about that search warrant that could taint a jury pool. And the government is arguing very strongly, as a matter of fact, that there are additional investigations that have spurned from things and that releasing that warrant would impugn people that have not been charged. And they're looking for some other things. The search warrant materials in whole they're looking for because the public has a right to know, etc. But the government is also arguing that these inquiries support a finding that they're not entitled to because that information is secret. So it's the media trying to get around the sealing of grand jury material and other things in the Mueller investigation using this criminal case against Nader, which they could care less about, as a backdrop for trying to get information about the Mueller report out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what's again, government attorneys arguing that that stuff is off limits while the Democrats run around crowing and suing for all the information in there. And the United States government is here arguing in the Nader case that that's just not happening. Now, the judge ruled in, granted the motion filed by the media coalition and denied it in part, saying that this stuff would not be available to them until after Nader's case is completed, and then they can have it. So it's just, there's a lot of docket entries and a lot of stuff is sealed in this case. So I'm just,
yeah. No, well, George Nader is one of those people that is a gigantic fish. He's a gigantic fish, especially when it comes to the Pizzagate world. He's a gigantic fish. He's had access to every White House since the mid to late 80s. He is a serial offender in this case. When he was apprehended earlier on in the year, we're not just talking about run-of-the-mill horror story pedophilia stuff. We're talking about bestiality.
Yeah.
We're talking about child bestiality stuff. And this guy has had access to every White House since the 80s.
Yeah.
So, when we see people like this flow into and out of the media, when we see Jeffrey Epstein completely disappear,
stuff going on in that case.
Well, hopefully somebody's playing it close to their chest then, and we're going to see more soon.
Yeah, there have been news reports about John Paul Brumel, I believe his name is, in France, being now interviewed and stuff like that. They haven't dropped that. It's going along. You okay?
Yeah.
You're like me.
It is it's a little bit of, I had some almonds before.
Ah, it's that again. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, there's that. So anyway, I'm just looking into this court case because, you know, every once every 2 weeks or so, I like to take a peruse down my pacer report line of all the cases I'm watching. And just see what's been going on when I haven't heard anything in the media about stuff. And I'm like, usually that means there's something bad going on for the bad guys. Let me see what's up. In the Flynn case, the government filed a list of all of the discovery materials that have been provided to Flynn. And I'm not really that impressed. You know, again, we talked about how the number of pages doesn't equate to solid information. Why did I click on that right now? Adam Schiff is right now speaking to reporters after the State Department blocked Gordon Sondland from testifying before Congress. He was one of the guys in the text messages that went back and forth between.
Earlier this morning.
No, stop playing. Stop playing. Sorry. I was writing this thread. I'm going to get rid of it. No, I'm not. Hold on. I have stuff I want to play that has to do with this. Syria nonsense from yesterday.
Okay.
The collective freakout from the media. I mean, we talked about this on the show on Monday, but the collective freakout from the media has been absolutely stunning. And last night, I think Tucker Carlson did the entire country a huge service with what he did. He had Colonel McFarland, I believe, on. Let me find it. Douglas McGregor. Here, let's listen.
Well, the swamp is.
Colonel, what do you make of the response to the president's announcement?
Well, the swamp is clearly very disturbed because the president has done something that I have not witnessed in the last 30 years. He's actually injecting strategy back into American foreign and defense policy. Let me explain. He's turned to Mr. Erdogan, who has been trying to carve out a portion of Syria now for a very long time. Remember, Mr. Erdogan is also partially responsible for standing up ISIS. Then ISIS turned out to be a Frankenstein's monster, and he decided it needed to be brought under control. Now he wants to resettle Sunni Arab refugees in northwestern Syria and create a kind of security zone for Turkish interests. But he's also simultaneously told Mr. Erdogan, you can do this, but now you are responsible for dealing with ISIS if ISIS rears its head. If it comes back, it's your problem. Now, this is a very important point. The president has shifted the burden of responsibility for something that is clearly regional, clearly goes back to Turkey, to Mr. Erdogan. At the same time, Russia has promised to maintain the territorial integrity of Syria, come what may. How is Russia going to deal with Mr. Erdogan, who has decided to carve out a piece of Syria for his own purposes? And then we have Iran. Iran wants to maintain its connectivity to Lebanon and its Shiite allies in that country. But with the Turks dominating northern Syria, Iran now is going to be unable, or at least will find it far, far more difficult to connect with Lebanon. The point is, the president has checkmated all of the key players in the region in Syria. Now they must confront each other for a change.
Oh, wait.
So there's that, and there's another one, too.
I like that. That's...
Yeah. I mean, you know, let's talk about strategy, right? Here, let's listen to the second half.
Allies in the world, the Kurds of Syria. Hold on. One that I've been hearing all day long on a loop on television, which is our only allies in the world, the Kurds of Syria. What about them? Everybody on television basically spent 12 hours today in a kind of tribute to the Syrian Kurds.
Before we arrived, the Maoist communist Kurds in northern Syria, who have a long history and a close relationship with Moscow as a result, were always interested in aligning themselves with anyone that would further their cause when their cause involves independence for themselves in Syria and also attacks against the Turks, whom they regard as enemies. In our absence, the Kurds now have to make a decision. Do we make a peace with Damascus, which is what the Russians have told them to do, which is what we have privately told them to do, which is what the Syrian government would like them to do? Or do the Kurds decide to take on the Turks independently? I rather think that the Syrian Kurds will decide that it's probably in their interest to side with Damascus. So once we pull out, I think we'll see that happen. But here's something else. Israel benefits from this because Iran is now at loggerheads with Turkey. Iran is interested in connecting to Hezbollah. The Russians have no interest in turning Syria into a platform for attack against Israel. Huh. So the Russians and the Iranians, who are checkmated by the Turks, now the Turks and all three of these people have to deal with the reality that Israel and the United States are benefiting from our withdrawal.
Mm.
Well, see, I appreciate that a lot more than the cookie cutter. We're abandoning the 50
soldiers we're taking out of there are keeping the lives of thousands in the balance. I mean, if that's the case,
first of all, like I said last night, these are conflicts that have been going on for generations.
Yep.
Okay. The Kurds and the Turks. I came across old newspaper articles from the 1930s about the Kurds and the Turks going at each other.
Right.
You know. So you think about what our interests are there, what we were supposed to be doing for a couple of days that it turned into years, and then you think about these age old rivalries that. Everybody has personal territorial interests, and what are we going to do? We're now our mission should evolve into resolving these old territorial tribal disputes.
Never going to happen.
Oh my God, it's never going to happen.
Want to stick on this for a second? Listen to President Trump yesterday. This is probably, I don't know how anyone could critique a man in his position for this. Here,
to parents.
Hold on.
Have to use them, but we are doing what we have to do. But we've been there for many years, long, many, many, many years beyond what we were supposed to be. Not fighting, just there. And it's time to come back home. But I can understand the other side of it. But if you go by the other side, that means we should never, ever come home. We should never, ever come home. And, you know, I have to sign letters often to parents of young soldiers that were killed, and it's the hardest thing I have to do in this job. I hate it. Afghanistan, I signed one the other day, Iraq, Syria. They get blown up by mines, they get taken out by a sniper, and I have to write letters to people And we make each letter different. Each person is different. And we make them personal, but no matter what you do, it's devastating. The parents will never be the same. The families will never be the same. People are killed. Many people are still being killed. It's going to go on that way for perhaps a long time. And we're willing to do what we have to do, but there has to be an end game. And if you stay, it's going to be the same thing. Eventually, you're going to have to leave. It's going to be the same thing. So I think what we're doing is the right thing. A lot of people agree with me. A lot of people agree with me. And again, you go back and see my speeches, a big part of my speech, and always when I won what some people consider to be.
In that same piece, he talks about how the American taxpayer is not going to be responsible for footing the bill and taking care in prison or Guantanamo Bay of all of these fighters that the people in that area refuse to take back to their own countries from where they came from. Mm. When have you ever heard an American president stand up for the American taxpayer, the American military family, the way that that man has been doing?
Not without mealy mouth excuses as to why we need to push on just a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Not without that, you know, so it's, and it's true. It was one of, when I was taking calls on this last night, it was one of the things that popped up a lot toward the end, that this is what he campaigned on. I don't see how any of this will do anything to upset the base that he garnered in that groundswell movement in 2016. One of the things that everybody voted for was the end to the wars, or at least someone who is ready to start putting that in motion.
Yeah.
So just because you're seeing a collective wailing and gnashing of teeth from the neocon neoliberal front,
we're gonna listen to a couple of those.
Yeah, I don't really buy this, and it just doesn't matter.
Here's a Meghan McCain.
Great. Sorry, this is not the topic, but I just
hold on.
So I'm going a little bit rogue, but I've been so mad this morning and so upset about this news that we are abandoning our Kurdish allies in the Middle East. These are allies of ours that American soldiers are still continuing to fight alongside. All we did was arm them, and they fought for America. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're just saying we're just going to leave them and abandon them. Mm-hmm. And to what? Everyone America. In the White House and every Republican who was mad that President Obama pulled out of Iraq, you feckless, unpatriotic cowards. I cannot believe this is where we're at, diplomatic-wise. And I cannot believe this is what message is this sending to our allies who have fought alongside us and to our American troops who have fought and died for this. And I cannot believe I'm waking up in the morning seeing...
I can't even listen to that shit anymore.
It is bull. Everything that Star Destroyer of a woman said is
not even
bullshit.
True. I know.
It's just everything. We fought and died. We're fighting for America. It's an American fight now? I don't. It's not even an American fight. What are you talking about? Thousands and thousands of miles away. The only Americans who are endangered by what's going on in the Middle East are those who are there. I don't understand this. And of course, Whoopi Goldberg and her smoker's cough at the back.
War. Four more wars.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, and to bring up Barack Obama, well, you want to know something? Yeah, Barack Obama went against military advice when he pulled out all of those all of our forces in the lead up to an election that he really wanted to win. He wanted to run on, I ended the war in Iraq and we killed bin Laden. That was his big 2012 push. I ended the war in Iraq and we killed bin Laden. The only thing that the only thing that we're leaving out here about all this stuff is when he pulled those troops out of Iraq, which I would love to see all those wars ended. But when he pulled those troops out of Iraq in 2011 leading up to 2012, they were also destabilizing Libya and Syria. They were putting so much black budget money into the region to do other things out there, that of course you're going to have bad things happen. So if President Trump is going to do the same thing to wind down these wars out there while not doubling down and making investments in how we can destroy countries around wherever we're stationed, then perhaps there won't be such a big backlash, even though normal order in the Middle East is sectarianism. So just because we may leave and there's going to be somebody that gets hurt, it doesn't mean it's not normal order. It's just that we don't remember a time when we weren't a part of it.
Yeah, because it's been 30 years. Here, hold on. Listen to Dan Crenshaw. Dan Crenshaw, who says we shouldn't be making this decision so abruptly, when meanwhile it's been discussed for over 10 months now. Here.
Yeah, abruptly. Years and years and years.
Hey, guys, I want to give you my thoughts on the president's decision to pull troops back from northern Syria and potentially allow the Turkish military to cross over that border. I have some serious concerns about this, mostly because there is no obvious benefit to American national security by pulling our own troops back. We have a very small and cost-effective force there. It provides stability. It protects our allies, the Kurds, and the Syrian Democratic Forces. If you allow the Turkish military to cross over that, we could see some serious hostilities between the Turks and our allies, and that would be a big problem. And again, no benefit to our own national security.
Guess what, Dan? Turkey is our NATO ally. We are bound by treaty to support them, not the Kurds. The Kurds are not in NATO.
I was just about to say that. They're our NATO ally.
What the hell is he talking about?
It's like we have got to protect this ragtag team of tribal forces from our ally. So then what are we going to do? I would love to see NATO broken up too. Then maybe he would have a little bit more of a something to say. I would understand them a little bit more if we can just break up NATO. Ridiculous. Why we're all allies against who? The Martians?
God. Anyway,
allied against the Martians.
I mean, really. It's really just... And then, of course, there was Ben Shapiro, who, you know, he does some good stuff, but he's also... He's just... I just... Like,
no,
dude...
Ben Shapiro's great if he's debating transgender college students.
Yes. Yes. But you're 35 years old. You've lived a cello lifestyle of, you know, being a virtuoso and whatever. I don't stand up here claiming to be some foreign policy expert. I just stick by my principles, which have always been, we are not the policemen of the world. Our sons and daughters are dying in endless, perpetual conflicts overseas with people who have been fighting with each other for thousands of years and have nothing to do with us. And that if our troops were here in our country at home and dispatched when needed for actual conflict that was voted on and approved by Congress, not only would we have a crap ton of money to raise the defenses here, but we would be able to better protect ourselves from any incoming terror attack from whatever sleeper cells have made it in or whatever. That's what we're here for, to defend our country, the borders of it, from enemies. That's just my opinion. But Ben Shapiro acts as though he's some foreign policy guru. It just annoys me. Like, who do you think you are, dude? You know more than the president does? Anyway, there's that.
Yeah, I tend to believe that if we actually defend our country by fortifying the country, I don't know how anybody gets off talking about Americans at risk when we still are the southern border. We should take those 50 troops out of Syria and put them on the southern border. And then once the southern border is closed down, clean out the interior.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah. That's what our military should be doing. Defending our borders. That's just I might have a more for most, for a lot of conservatives. I might have a more extremist, in quotes, view on military action. I have never changed. I've always been this way. Only when necessary, peace through strength, constitutionally approved, not what the hell has been going on here. You know, it's funny because you remember when we were like when I was working with the Paul campaign, we were like standing next to leftist anti-war activists. You know, saying, yeah, we agree with you guys. Let's take these people home. Now those people are crazy, crazy, crazy. But they weren't back then. They were actually kind of straightforward on their anti-war stance. I don't know. It's up is down. And then, you know, like I talked about on Monday's show about the dude who was like, oh, yeah, because Lindsey Graham is such a leftist. Hello, that's my point. That's my point. Since when have you agreed with Lindsey Graham? on anything. Anyway.
Should be upsetting.
I am upset. I don't know why. It just, this really bothers me. Like, I don't want anybody else's kids to die in a conflict that we have no part in whatsoever. Anyway. Let's hear an updated report, Frank, on the whistleblower, shall we? The leaker, I mean.
Oh, great. Go ahead.
Here's Catherine Herridge.
Contact with Stanford Democrats.
We turn to Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge.
Behind closed doors, sources close to the matter tell Fox News that intelligence community watchdog Michael Atkinson told lawmakers all he knew about the whistleblower's contact with Stanford Democratic Chairman Adam Schiff came through the media. Atkinson did not know how many times the whistleblower contacted Schiff's committee between the president's July 25th phone call with the Ukrainian leader and August 12th when the complaint was filed. Republicans said Schiff has a conflict because only his team can fill in the gaps.
The president who is there attempting to remove from office on the basis of this impeachment deserves to know what type of contact there was.
On Twitter, the whistleblower's legal team confirmed a second intelligence official came forward with direct knowledge of alleged misconduct by the president. Quote, second whistleblower does possess firsthand knowledge of certain info. There is no legal requirement for any whistleblower to have such knowledge. Law only requires a reasonable belief. A new letter from 90 former national security and diplomatic officials, including harsh critics of the president, said the whistleblower followed the rules. Quote, all Americans should be united in demanding that all branches of our...
First of all, real whistleblowers don't get this treatment.
Yeah.
Real whistleblowers get destroyed. Destroyed. Financially, in the public square, yep. Thrown in jail, have pedophilia planted on them... All kinds of stuff. Can never show their faces in public. Get bankrupt. Robin Gritch is claiming she just got fired from a job because the person that's her boss was friends with Andrew McCabe. Think about this. This is like 90 people writing a glowing report about how the whistleblowers should be protected. Are we in bizarro land? Snowden is living over in freaking Russia. Not that he followed the policy because the policy sucks. Binny is crucified. Drake, who I don't appreciate or agree with in terms of politics, he was relegated to working at Taco Bell, which is the most that most whistleblowers can say.
And think about Julian Assange, who's merely a publisher. A publisher of a whistleblower who we may never, ever get to the bottom of.
Yeah. And not only that, but Herridge also reported on Tucker Carlson that the whistleblower/leaker penned a memo to themselves after speaking with the first whistleblower or the second whistleblower, the new leaker that's coming out, the one who supposedly called him with all the information. After speaking to that one, he penned a memo to himself that outlined how there was a transcript of the call, and the transcript is a verbatim recollection of or transcript of what happened on the call, that all of this information would be right in that transcript. Uh-oh. So now there goes the left's argument that this transcript is missing things because their own witness is saying in a memo to themselves, because don't you know, Frank, I write memos to myself all the time.
Yeah, so does Susan Rice.
I know, and so does Andrew McCabe and James Comey. I mean, I sit after this show, I'm going to write, nothing that I said in the show was meant to offend anyone. I said everything from the... I mean, who does this? Who does this? But not only that, it's backing up what we've been saying, what the transcript says. The guy uses the transcript as a basis for how factual this is. Mm-hmm. And the transcript blows it out of the water.
Well, if it's not testament that they only had one plan and they had to stick to it no matter what, then I don't know. I don't think that this plan, if it was going to work, I don't think the plan included the transcript actually being made public. It can't.
No, because, and I'm surprised that they didn't. We talked about this on Monday. I'm really surprised.
Where do you turn? Okay, so you had all this lined up. You had multiple whistleblowers. You had the complaint. Nothing matches the actual transcript. So you have Schiff that goes out there and mischaracterizes it in some kind of a really embarrassing mafia don kind of a way in front of that intelligence hearing. So you have all this stuff that you had lined up to do, but the transcript makes it all look completely silly. Where do you turn? How else, aside from just keep moving forward, pretend that the transcript never came out, and keep pretending, gaslighting people into believing that their eyes are lying to them, and that there really is something bad hidden in this innocuous conversation. Where else do you turn?
Dan Bongino said yesterday on his podcast that very thing. Actually, now they're starting to issue subpoenas because they know. They'll be litigated in court and it will buy them time. It will buy them time. And Stephen Miller has been going around doing, he's a senior policy advisor. He's been going around doing interviews and talking about what's actually happening here. And I want everybody to put themselves in the perspective of maybe back when JFK was president. And like, when has there ever been a time that we have an administration official going on the record saying things like what we're about to hear? It's a longer clip, but I'd like to stop after some of this stuff, Frank, and just get commentary. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Don't be so excited about it.
Sounds good.
Hold on.
You're working arm and arm. Each man is.
Hold on, sorry. Okay, here we go. October 6th. It's a telephone interview, and the interviewee is so annoying, apparently. Headlines with The Voice, who shared this, removed it from the interview completely because it's not even necessary for context.
Yes, the attempt at impeachment is best understood as a legislative coup against a democratically elected president. And the radical leftists in Congress are working arm in arm with the deep state saboteurs and their allies in the media in order to try to effectuate this illegal coup, although rest assured they will fail. The deep state is a collection of permanent bureaucrats enmeshed inside the federal government who can't be fired or removed, at least historically have not been able to be, because of misguided civil service laws that believe they know better than you and your listeners and the voters how the country ought to be run. At this moment in time, the deep state has a knife aimed at the heart of American democracy. And that's what you're seeing playing across your TV screens and newspaper pages and online with these so-called whistleblowers, who are, of course, in fact, angry, hate-filled, rage-driven bureaucrats determined to take down the president of the United States.
I mean, it's unprecedented, and it's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But this is why I don't really have, I mean, I know a disclosure, public disclosure continues, and more people are realizing this. And that's what I'm most hopeful about.
Yeah.
All of my hope and all of my inspiration comes from the fact that this is a very open and naked situation right now. And people are seeing it. As far as what action is going to be taken, what is going to be able to be litigated, and what results of said litigation are going to be accepted by a public that is half brainwashed and half just waking up, I don't know. All I do know is that all my hope comes from the conversations that are springing up and the observations that are being made and what we're actually facing here.
They're literally attempting to remove a president from office because they think, I call them power brokers now.
Yeah. Like, what's going to be left in his place?
No, it doesn't matter to them. Whatever it is doesn't matter because he's gone. And I brought everybody back because Brandon shared, he re-uploaded to his YouTube channel the speech that President Trump gave before he was elected in 2016, where he talks about this very thing. And it's almost as though he was speaking into being what all of us had known for you know, at least activism wise, had known for so long and never heard anybody in his position ever say outside of JFK, who alluded to it, you know, albeit briefly in a few different speeches. He literally called out the entire structure and said he was running to take it down. And here we are, and there's a civil war going on in the dark. In our own government, a civil war is going on. Here, there's one last thing I wanted to play. Hold on.
Support our president. The battle lines are drawn. Support our president. And tell your members of Congress that they need to support our president, too. That is the single most important thing you can do. A tsunami-size backlash against the Democrats. And Adam Schiff should not be allowed in polite society. He should be relegated to wearing a tinfoil hat. He was the lead proponent of this ludicrous Russia conspiracy theory against our president that has been so systematically debunked and dismantled and disproven at every turn. But again, pushed through and through from the beginning by permanent bureaucrats and their Democrat co-conspirators. And so the situation is indeed a grave one, but there will be a tremendous backlash against the Democrats. But understand this, that for the Democrats, they want to stop this president because they want to stop his policies. They want to force back onto you open borders. They want to subjugate you under a regulatory regime that crushes out your liberties. They want to enmesh us in foreign conflicts all around the globe. And they want to keep us in a state of economic serfdom to foreign countries, trade cheating, and mercantilist policies. So this is about the sovereignty, security, independence, and freedom of the American people.
Can't argue with that.
Who was that again?
Stephen Miller.
Man, that's good stuff. That's good stuff, especially the comment about Adam Schiff and being
relegated out of polite society.
His presence is incompatible with polite society, and I think that is the greatest thing about all this is that's the greatest and most coherent statement about everything we're seeing right now. It is people who belong in some banana republic. Who belong managing a gulag somewhere in Soviet Russia. These are the people. These are the jail guards. These are the jail guards of the gulag archipelago. This is exactly what we're talking about here. And Solzhenitsyn would have said quite a bit about these people. But instead, they wear their suits and they talk about democracy and the Constitution. They are snakes. Snakes. And
it's pretty horrible.
Yeah, well, that's why, and it's all my gripes with feminism too. It's all my gripes with feminism and all the cultural, social justice, cultural totalitarian warriors out there too, the fanatics. The only reason why these quisling type, weak, chinless, just worthless people are in any kind of position where they can attain this kind of success and this kind of notoriety and this kind of money and all this stuff is because before they arrived, there was once a society that was polite enough to let quislings like this into the tent. You know, they talk about patriarchy. They talk about rules of the jungle. They talk about oppression and all that stuff. Well, guess what? This is not the result of an oppressive society. This is a result of a society that forgives too much.
Yeah. No, agreed. Their only reason why their ideas are allowed to flourish is the very thing they're trying to crush.
Yeah.
It's like a catch 22 for them.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, like how we talked about Bernie Sanders talking about the Constitution.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So, more. Do you guys remember the IG report about the FBI official who accepted sports tickets from a journalist?
Oh yeah,
we got from the Daily Caller. We got who that is.
Who?
The FBI official was Michael Cortan. He was the assistant director of public affairs. He was the one who was involved with the leak to Barrett of the Wall Street Journal in the McCabe issue. He lied several times. They got the report and they released it. It's actually here. They had originally just released a a summary page saying the Department of Justice declined to prosecute and what happened. And I think there's some rumblings that this person that that provided these tickets could have been Tapper from CNN.
Why not?
They don't name the journalist, but they do. I'll link this Daily Caller. This Daily Caller, it's a CNN journalist. I'll link this in the show notes for everyone, the actual link to the thing. And, you know, Daily Caller does a lot of FOIA work. I don't know if people realize how much.
I haven't noticed.
They do. They do a lot. So this is interesting. And I need to read through it in total. The issue I'm having is I really would like to get this piece up. And I'd really also like to get another video out for everybody, like kind of a summary video. I'm finding that I am too busy, Frank, to even, like, I feel bad. Like, all the stuff that's going on with Uncover DC, the podcast 3 days a week, it's really the Uncover DC stuff because we're moving and shaking so much behind the scenes getting ready that it almost looks like I'm just kind of like hanging out with my, you know, with my Cheetos and doing nothing. But I just don't have time in the day for anything. Now I'm going away for a week. I'm so excited to get down there to this conference.
Yeah, but that week away is not going to, you're going to be doing some great stuff.
Yeah, I'm working. I think my days are 4 to 12, meaning 4 a.m. to 12 a.m. every day. Every day that I'm there. So, and then I'm going to come home Monday morning. My flight lands at like 9 in the morning. And then I'm going to rush home and we're going to jump right into the podcast. And then I'm going to D.C.
You got so much to do.
So much to do. So little time to do it in. But I'm trying, guys. I'm trying to do my best for you. I just want to let you know. Oh, we listened to that. There was something else that I had here. Oh, yes. This. Did you hear the clip, James Clapper?
I think I might have read about this clip, if it's the clip I'm thinking of.
Oh. Let's listen to this. Okay. This is insane.
Wrongdoing, I think.
Poor Clapper. Poor Clapper. Here we go. No. Okay.
Are you concerned that Barr's or Durham's investigation will find wrongdoing and seek to punish former intelligence officials?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there was any wrongdoing. I think at the time all of us were trying to navigate a very, very difficult, politically fraught, highly charged situation. I know for my part, my main concern was the Russians and the threat posed by the Russians to our very political fabric. And the message I'm getting from all this is apparently what we were supposed to have done was to ignore the Russian interference, ignore the Russian meddling and the threat that it poses to us. And oh, by the way, blown off what the then commander chief, President Obama, told us to do, which was to assemble all the reporting that we could, that we had available to us, and put it in one report that the president could pass on to the Congress and to the next administration. And while we're at it, declassify as much as we possibly could to make it public. And that's what we did.
He totally throws Obama under the bus. I was just following the orders of the president of the United States, the commander in chief. Did you hear that?
Yes, yes, yes. But I heard it from my point of view. That's the only problem. The way he was also passing it along was we were in a situation that was unprecedented, and it was an election, so there's so much politics floating in the air, and we were just trying to do the best we could with navigating through a foreign plot with all of this going on and trying to do the best for our country.
Yeah, but Frank, listen again to the beginning very carefully here.
Are you concerned that Barr's or Durham's investigation will find wrongdoing and seek to punish former intelligence officials?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there was any wrongdoing.
Oh, wow.
That's not a Brennan-esque response.
No.
That's a, I don't think so. I mean, who knows? Who knows what those other guys were doing? I mean,
it was so crazy.
Yeah, it was such a crazy
time.
Everything
was so crazy. I'm sure a couple of crimes were committed. It's so everything was just so nuts at the time.
I mean, somebody broke a law somewhere along the line. Doesn't that always happen?
The average American commits 4 felonies a day. You know that? They don't even know it.
I mean, they do it crossing this to jaywalk sometimes.
I'm sure a few of us jaywalked when we were in the middle of this.
That just yesterday I witnessed my wife cutting the tag off a mattress. I tried to stop her, but we're in the midst of an impeachment. You know, you can't catch everything here.
Yeah, well, I
listen, that's not a confident clapper. Let me throw Obama under the bus. I get what you're saying, and I do agree with you to a large extent. I understand. They're trying to buttress it with, well, the Russians. I get it. But at the same time, he's like, I don't think so. Just the tone of his voice. He's scared shitless. He was the same one that lied about, what was it? The FISA warrant? Or that he knew that there was a FISA warrant? I don't remember. But him and Brennan have been hand in hand in this whole thing. Even through all the things they used to do in the Obama administration with tampering with vote results in Florida and all that stuff. You know?
Yeah.
So.
But all of these people, they will agree on things like occupying Syria. That's the thing that gets me. So you have all this nonsense. You have all of this criminality, and you have all of these efforts to deflect away from what's going on and to explain certain things away. And we can be on opposite sides there, where they're pointing at concocted crimes from secondhand sources as real reasons to impeach somebody. While here we have this guy who was one of the front men for one of the greatest
stutter because it's that bad.
Like, it's so bad. But then you go farther away and you see all the things that they all agree on, and you just realize how impossible the system in the current form that it is in is. You see how impossible the situation is. There's so many heads that need to be lopped off.
Yeah.
And mostly figuratively, let me just say.
Oh, God. Yeah, figuratively. Yes. And not only that, but the way that the host asks the question, are you worried that they might actually hold people accountable for these crimes?
Who's the host?
That's a great question, Frank. Let's see. I don't even know this dude. I don't know who the person asking the question is.
Because if Clapper is on television, it's probably MSNBC or CNN.
It's CNN. I just don't know who this...
concerned that Barr's or Durham's investigation will find wrongdoing?
Are you concerned that they might find out what you did and hold you accountable for it?
Are you concerned that all of your cover might be evaporating? I mean, we can only do so much. You guys were supposed to have this wrapped up by now.
Oh, gosh. Oh, Lord. Oh, boy. Okay. I got to stop this. God. What do you think about this Ellen thing?
What? That she went to the Cowboy game?
Yeah.
What do I think about it? I don't know. I don't think about anything. I was watching the game for the little bit that I was watching it because the Cowboys are an embarrassing pile of shit. And I noticed that she was there with George Bush. I've seen George Bush there at those games many times. I've seen him at many Yankees, Texas Rangers games. So I know how cozy he is with Nolan Ryan and Jerry Jones. And they're just all Texas people.
Yeah.
Well, the Bushes are transplants from Connecticut, but still. They're all Texas people now. As far as Ellen goes, I mean, I don't get really – I'm not surprised by when these A-list celebrities show up to places like this. I'm not surprised. And as far as this big, I don't know what kind of controversy she drummed up, but I saw people sharing a few clips of her explaining why she was at the game.
She didn't say anything bad. I mean, she basically said, I'm friends with people that I don't agree with, and I think everyone should be.
Which I don't care. So I don't know why.
But people are mad that people are supporting what she said because it's Ellen. And I'm like, you're just pretty much exemplifying the problem. Well, although Ellen is a slime ball.
It is it's the problem. I guess it's the exemplifying a problem of intolerance, political intolerance. Absolutely. There is that phase of it. But I mean, George Bush, the Obamas, the Clintons, the Bushes, Obamas and Clintons, have they ever showed you any intolerance for each other?
No.
And come on.
No, the funny thing is that under the comments of her apology are all these people talking about how George Bush is a war criminal.
They're all war criminals.
Well, yeah. So I said, I'm so glad that you guys support President Trump's decision to remove troops from Syria. I'm glad that we can agree on this. I'm glad we can agree on something. No responses yet.
Yeah. Bush started a lot of wars. He started a lot of wars. He tripled the size of the federal government. Obama continued and expanded those wars. And 3 years in, I know there's been a lot of people, checking their watches about all of the conflicts that are continue to go on under Donald Trump's administration, including the one in Yemen and elsewhere. But hey, you know what? He didn't start any new ones.
No, he didn't. And it's really hard.
And if we really do start winding some of them down, the only thing you could then give him credit for is ending them. Or at least attempting to. Every time he tries to end the war in Syria, Assad magically gasses his people again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, so how can people not at least give him credit for trying? Every time he even inferences that he wants to leave, something happens to make them stay. Like Assad wants him so bad. No, don't go. Don't go.
Let me gas and kill a few people so that you guys can stick around.
I swear to God, if you guys leave, I'll gas the people again. I just don't get this. So as far as Ellen goes, I didn't know what the controversy was. There's all types of celebrities that show up to those games, especially in Dallas. I don't know.
All right. So let's not even give that any more time. I would much rather finish the show by talking about what the leftist Minneapolis mayor is doing to the Target Center and the Trump campaign in anticipation of his rally there. Do you know about this? I'm just going to read this email from the campaign. The radical leftist mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, is abusing the power of his office and attempting to extort President Trump's reelection campaign by conjuring a phony and outlandish bill for security in an effort to block a scheduled Keep America Great rally. Democrat Mayor Frey is using the bogus security charges to pressure the Target Center, which is the site of the rally, into preventing Minnesota residents from exercising their First Amendment rights in support of the president. They have preemptively informed the Target Center it would be responsible for $530,000 in security and other costs related to the event. The Target Center attempted to pass the costs on to the Trump campaign under the threat of withholding the use of the arena. So the Trump campaign tells the Target Center that the Secret Service is responsible for coordinating security, and withholding the use of the arena would be viewed as a breach of contract. And result in court. Additionally, $530,000 is more than 26 times the estimated security cost for a 2009 Target Center healthcare rally held by Obama. Police officials estimated the costs were around $20,000. And the costs are a matter between the city and the Secret Service. Now, in addition, what they're doing is they're not allowing their police to appear in uniform inside the arena if they are standing near the president.
Wait, what? What?
They do not want the Minneapolis police to be associated with the president of the United States. So wow. They are not allowing them to dress in their uniform. They must wow. be in plain clothes. So now there's this huge thing of all the cops that are going to be wearing red, we support, cops support President Trump's shirts inside the stadium for the rally if it goes on. So they're basically trying to strong arm a rally out of Minneapolis, where isn't this where the Syrians all hang out and the refugees all hang out with Omar?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if anybody
did this to Obama?
Anybody did this to Obama?
Oh God, no!
The things that people said. I still remember those 8 years. The people that would, for any reasonable amount of criticism that the Fabian socialist President Obama received, because of course he was so thoroughly and tightly protected by the media, so protected. But for every reasonable level of criticism that the Fabian socialists had when he was especially infecting the public square of opinion and destroying the social fabric that we thought had been healing nicely over the decades, I remember hearing people saying, "No president has been treated like this before." And I wonder to myself, if he was being treated badly or poorly in some way, is it anything compared to this?
No.
Anything compared to this? A guy who was featured on Saturday Night Live as recently as 2015. A guy, Donald Trump, who has spent so much of the 90s on Howard Stern and appearing in movies and award shows, dancing in farmers' costumes and award-winning television shows. When did he become a person that a mayor would not want a police officer to be seen in uniform next to? When did he become that person? Can anybody put please, somebody help me on this. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
You want to talk about brainwashing? Holy, Tracy, this is why I'm saying, everybody want to keep your cards close to your door. Don't worry, a report is coming here. An indictment is coming here. They've been playing and winning the psychological warfare game for 3 years now, and all we've got is drip, drip. I'm telling you, it's not going to be enough.
But they're playing and winning with the people that would never have understood our side anyway. They're not winning with me or you or millions and millions and millions of other people, plus all the walkaways. They're playing to the stupid people.
That's a point.
I'm sorry. I have to push back on that because
it's a good point. It's a good point. I just can't stand it.
I know. It's frustrating.
Because you want to know what it is, Tracy. I said like the other day on my show, I said, I feel like I'm Oscar Schindler at the end of Schindler's List. I could have saved more.
Know.
I can't stand seeing people being destroyed like this mentally. When I say destroyed mentally, it doesn't mean I can't stand seeing people voting differently than I.
No, just the complete brainwashing of,
yes.
of you know, the aversion to anything truthful.
How much better our reality would be in 2020 if all the people who already intend on voting against Donald Trump continued to do so, but only went to the polls knowing, well, hey, the economy's better. I do agree with this, and this. I tend to think that we need to do more of this, and that.
And no, that would be normal. We can't have that.
Can you imagine that?
They wouldn't vote against him.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's true too. Because I guess it would be true too. That would actually be a harmonious existence there. Because even Democrat lawmakers would say, to their constituents, if he wins again, it wouldn't be the worst thing. Look at how he has been compromising with us. But that is also more evidence of what this is really all about. These aren't people who are treating four-year elections as four-year elections. These are people who have been entrenched for a long time and have a lot to lose and a lot to be exposed on, that are fighting for their lives. It's not just political lives and their careers in public service. They don't want to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is all it comes down to.
I agree with you. This was a good one, Frank, today. Very good. Listen, I will see you. I guess I'll talk to you on Monday.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to you before then, but, you know, solid talks on Monday.
Got it.
You guys have been listening to the Wednesday edition, recorded on Tuesday, of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Yankees win! The Yankees win!
Val. If I never have to hear that again for the rest of my life, it will be a beautiful thing.
Well, if it's a good year for me, then you're going to have to hear that two more times. They still have to, they have to win eight more games. So I'm just being happy in the little window of time I could be happy.
All right, but I will grant you happiness in listening to that ever so famous call that I have to hear every time I put on sports radio. In New York. This has been Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. Make sure to check out the fantastic show coming to you this Friday, where Frankie Yankee Val comes to you live, or taped, but whatever, you know.
I'm always live.
See you then.
Later.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, those guys were in the Redskins organization. They worked for the Redskins. Everybody's trying to pick the Sean McVay tree. Hey, that bud came from Washington Redskins. They didn't even know what they had. And yet, you know as well as I, if Sean McVay was in Washington right now as the head coach, he would not be having the success that he's had in Los Angeles with the Rams. Why? He wouldn't be able to do what he wants to do. There would be roadblocks. There'd be obstacles. Probably wouldn't want the job. And people would be looking, hey, this is a young guy, too young, he's not ready. Well, he's proven that's not the case. But you take the same guy and put him in a different environment, he's not successful. You know, a lot of it's focused on, well, the player doesn't have enough talent. The coach is not good enough. And very often that is the case. But when you don't have good management, that's also a problem. You don't have a good general manager, that's also a problem. You know what the biggest problem is? When you have a bad owner.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.